TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Today is day 585 of genocide. Professor Noor Erekat's urgent plea at the United Nations. On May 15, Noor Erekat delivered a searing statement at the UN headquarters in New York to mark the 77th anniversary of the Nakba, better known as the catastrophe. The United Nations are commemorating the violent expulsion of 750,000 Palestinians from their homes and land in 1948 to make room for the State of Israel. Noor Erekat is a Palestinian human rights lawyer and Rutgers University professor. In her address, she focused on the ongoing campaign of genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. As trained lawyer, Erekat confronts the narrative that frames this as a, quote, war. This is not a legal controversy, she says. There's no question that this is genocide. It is a political controversy. And she urged the nations who filled the auditorium to break their silence. Before bringing you her remarks at the United Nations, here's a clip from a recent interview on Democracy Now! Where Noor Erekat is a frequent guest. Amy Goodman asked her about the boomerang effect. Erekat's extraordinary statement that the U.S.-backed war on Palestine is expanding authoritarianism at home, right here inside the U.S. Here's part of the Democracy Now! Interview recorded on March 11, 2025.
We're joined now from Philadelphia by Palestinian human rights lawyer, Rutgers University professor Noor Erekat. Her most recent article for the Boston Review is called "The Boomerang Comes Back: How the U.S.-backed War on Palestine is Expanding Authoritarianism at Home." Talk about what you mean by the boomerang effect.
Thank you, Amy. By the boomerang effect, I am invoking Amy Sacer, Martinican essayist, author, poet, who in 1950 wrote a searing polemic on the discourse on colonialism, where he pointed a finger at European and Western leaders who were condemning Hitler for the execution of genocide within Europe's shores and telling them very blatantly that they are not different from Hitler, but have little Hitlers inside of them that they have failed to condemn because their violence has been meted out against brown and black and indigenous peoples in their colonial periphery. And in that critique, he was emphasizing that the Holocaust, the Jewish Holocaust that happens at the hands of the Nazis, was rehearsed on other indigenous black, brown, colonized peoples, and emphasizing that there is no violence in a colonial periphery that does not boomerang back home into the domestic sphere. And my emphasis here by invoking that was to show that there is no way to defeat fascism at home without combating empire abroad. In order to defeat U.S. state violence at home, it has to be confronted on both fronts of its domestic and its foreign image. In this instance, we have seen that boomerang come home especially quickly as the United States, under the Biden administration, continued, fomented, supplied, made possible a genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza for 16 months straight. In order to do that, repressed speech at home, fomented the attack on students, expanded presidential authority, refused to apply U.S. law, denigrated international law, and basically created, spread a red carpet for the Trump administration to come now and expand that repression to all other vulnerable communities. And I want to emphasize that this was possible because of the thorough dehumanization of Palestinians, because of the desensitization to their suffering, because of the racialization as violent and dangerous. There was not a blink amongst the Democratic establishment that children were being slaughtered and asking for Americans not to slaughter them. Somehow, do not kill children became an exception when it came to Palestinians. There was actually supporting the repression of universities of their students because they were described as violent and dangerous rather than celebrated as anti-war protesters in the tradition of university protests in this country. I have quotes from the Biden administration, from Biden himself, excuse me, where he says, let me be clear, violent protests will not be tolerated, but peaceful protest is, suggesting that the student protests were violent when 98% of them were nonviolent. And the violent ones were violent specifically because of mob violence and because of police violence, because of drones, because of law enforcement that was sent out to the universities. It was Biden who said, this blatant anti-Semitism is reprehensible and dangerous. It has absolutely no place on college campuses or anywhere in our country. It was the Democratic establishment that has created the conditions that we are now seeing taken advantage of. The Trump administration before has tried to gut women and gender studies, DEI, critical race theory, but could not do it. But in this moment, has been able to do it because all of the guards have been let down as the supposed liberal establishment allowed for these repressive regimes to be mobilized against Palestinians once again, understanding us as the lowest hanging fruit to sacrifice rather than as the canary in the coal mine that has been telling you danger is here. Those Palestinians and their allies here on university campuses heroically at points struggled to save some sort of core humanitarian principles in the United States and instead were expelled, were suspended, were doxxed, were denied graduation. And now there can be no surprise that the Trump administration is mobilizing with ease as they continue to use Palestinians as their Trojan horse in order to gut the welfare state, in order to defund universities, in order to go after minority communities. And so this message is not to point fingers, but this message is to mobilize us and to stand in line that in order to defeat this fascist rollout, Palestinians have to be centered. Palestinian humanity has to be recognized. Palestine has to be central to an agenda, not because it is exceptional, but specifically because it is not exceptional and it is central to this agenda that is being rolled out, and it can stand as the gate against further repression.
That was Professor Nora Erekat, interviewed by Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! On March 11. I placed it here as introduction to Nora Erekat's statement at the UN headquarters in New York to mark the 77th anniversary of the Nakba, better known as the catastrophe. Please consider that the spread of autocracy is a consequence of the injustice visited upon Gaza, and that helping end the genocide there can lead to freedom here. And here now is Professor Nora Erekat at the United Nations on May 15, 2025.
Today is day 585 of genocide. And every day we witness unprecedented atrocities. 2 days ago, we saw a baby in a red onesie, not yet 1 year old, have both of her tiny legs amputated. We witnessed a missile rip through a hospital to kill a renowned journalist receiving treatment and learned of the assassination of a 12-year-old boy who witnessed the massacre of 15 paramedics and their burial in a mass grave. Israel has destroyed 92% of Gaza's residential buildings, incapacitated its 36 hospitals, and prevented the entry of food and basic goods. In doing so, it is not only killing Palestinians now, but threatening the possibility of a Palestinian future. A campaign that seeks to obliterate the future of a people is a genocide. Yet, despite these chilling statistics and an ICJ decision indicating its plausibility, there remains controversy as to this basic fact. Why? The most pervasive talking point is that Israel is not targeting Palestinians as a people, but only targeting Hamas. Putting aside significant issues in law and fact that militate against this point, let me just share with you some statistics. What we know so far is that 2% of Palestinians in Gaza have been killed, including over 20,000 children buried and disappeared. The names of those under the age of one fill the first 14 pages of a 649-page document. So far, 1,200 entire families have been erased forever from the civil registry. 3 months into the war, the UN humanitarian chief described Gaza as uninhabitable. And since then, the situation has only gotten worse. This certainly exceeds Hamas militants. According to Israel, these horrifying numbers are irrelevant because they are the result, they say, of deliberate human shielding by Hamas. Again, putting aside significant issues of law and fact, let me just share with you the tactics of the army itself. It has sniped children twice above the waist. It has used quadcopters to spray and kill children who are sprawled and injured on the floor. It has destroyed the largest in vitro fertility clinic, including 4,000 embryos. It has executed patients with their hands zip-tied and thrown into mass graves. They have sexually assaulted detainees captured without charge or trial, bombed safe routes where Palestinians were ordered to flee, bombed safe zones where Palestinians were ordered to shelter, tortured medical doctors to death, destroyed more than half of Gaza's desalination plants, undermining access to clean water, leveled all four major universities, attacked factories, libraries, bakeries, heritage sites, 247 mosques, 3 churches, and bulldozed 16 cemeteries. As put by Professor Shirin Sayali, any honest observer of this war understands that the target of Israeli force and U.S.-supplied weapons is the Palestinian civilian. Hamas is the collateral damage. The purpose of this campaign is the destruction of the Palestinian people for the sake of achieving long-term Israeli security, what I term Nakba peace, a violent oxymoron that predicates Jewish-Israeli safety on the elimination of Palestinians. In pursuit of its territorial ambitions to achieve unchecked Zionist settler sovereignty, Israel has removed Palestinians for 77 years and counting. It has imposed a permanent military occupation on the West Bank and Gaza for 58 years and counting. And it has besieged 2.3 million Palestinians who are now possibly only 2 million because of this past 19 months, besieged them for 17 years and counting. What we have been witnessing for the past 585 days is the cruelest and most violent episode of the ongoing Nakba. This did not start on October 7th, nor was it a response to October 7th that provided a useful cover in order to accelerate this massive removal. On October 12, 2023, Agricultural Minister Avi Dichter told us plainly, this is Nakba 2023, a campaign that is evidenced across Palestinian geographies, including in the northern West Bank, where some 40,000 Palestinians have been removed just this year. The Trump administration has adopted this goal in its current bid to build a Gaza Riviera to remove Palestinians to the Sudan, Somalia, or Syria. And most recently, on May 4th, 2025, the Israeli cabinet unanimously voted to reoccupy all of Gaza and ethnically cleanse its remaining inhabitants. This is why the return of more than 300,000 Palestinians to their homes in North Gaza in early 2025 was so incredible. It was the first time in nearly 8 decades of ongoing Nakba that we witnessed the return of Palestinians en masse, a return that embodies the national aspirations of the Palestinian people. As chronicled by Ahmed Aburtima, who marched home, on that day, I walked as I had never walked before, about 15 kilometers nonstop. I entered Gaza City, a dream long cherished during the days of war, now realized. Despite unprecedented cruelty, Palestinians refused to surrender and marched home by foot. This is precisely why Palestinians are racialized as a security threat, because we refuse to disappear. The Nakba is ongoing, and so is Palestinian resistance to our elimination. There is sufficient law to end the genocide, to lift the blockade, to end the occupation, and to realize Palestinian self-determination. Had international law ever been enough, however, Palestinian refugees would be growing their families and their gardens on their original lands rather than searching for the remains of flesh of their babies beneath the rubble. Remarkably, the time of genocide has also been a moment of significant judicial strides furthering Palestinian liberation. In January 2024, the International Court of Justice determined that Israel's campaign was plausible genocide. In May 2024, it issued another provisional measure ordering the withdrawal from Rafah. That same month, the International Criminal Court finally issued arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant. In July 2024, the ICJ issued an advisory opinion determining that Israel's presence in the West Bank and Gaza is unlawful, ordering it to withdraw its settlers and military from the territory and to provide reparations for the Palestinian people. Last month, the ICJ heard an argument on the legality of banning UNRWA, the UN refugee agency responsible for humanitarian relief, and now banned amid a starvation campaign that has killed 57 children in 2 months. This is not a legal controversy. It is a political one. The United States, among other states, has wrung its hands behind judicial rulings, but this is selective deference to the court. Since 2020, an emerging consensus among legacy human rights organizations and the World Court have defined Israel as an apartheid regime. Rather than boycott, divest from, and sanction apartheid Israel, the global community has attempted to normalize it. 5 years later, we see the danger of allowing that exception. Apartheid and genocide are on the same continuum. Three of the specific acts conducted to maintain apartheid are identical to the acts commit genocide. In the former, for apartheid, they are done for the purpose of domination. In the latter, they are done with the intent to destroy. Genocide is the logical outcome of any project to conquer and settle the land upon which and other people live, unless it is checked. Many of you have either survived colonialism or are the ancestors of those who have survived colonialism, and you are painfully aware of its legacies. That's why in 1974, this body firmly resolved that Palestinians are a juridical people. Palestinians exist and deserve to exist. By relegating Palestine to a bilateral political issue beyond the reach of international norms, you have steadily normalized occupation. By failing to apply sanctions and engage in boycott, many of you have normalized apartheid. And now, by failing to act, you are at risk of normalizing genocide. If it is permissible to deny a people exist, to cage them, to subject them to systematic warfare, then to use AI technology to bomb them at unprecedented rates in their homes, to burn them alive in tents, to experiment on them with suicide drones, to deny them medical care, to allow premature babies to rot in NICU units and mamas be denied anesthetic to have C-sections, to starve them while their food decays in miles of aid trucks, all without consequence, and worse, while insisting that their lives are secondary, if not altogether insignificant, relative to Zionist settler sovereignty, then I promise you that no one is safe. As put by Colombian President Gustavo Petro, Gaza is a rehearsal for the rest of the world. Israeli Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich recently said that the victory in the war would mean the full destruction of Gaza and the displacement of its residents. He has also boasted that Israelis, quote, are finally going to conquer the Gaza Strip. We are no longer afraid of the word occupation. Smotrich's audacity is our failure. You must make it impossible for Smotrich and anyone else to boast of conquest through genocide in the 21st century. Make those who speak it have to say it in hushed whispers, in closed rooms, rather than boast about that conquest. But let us speak honestly. Most of you fear U.S. retribution. The genocide in Gaza is one of the major atrocities of our time, and most people in the world are against it. Our inability to stop it reflects an international system where the equality of nation states remains an aspirational principle. It might be good for us to remember, the United States is an empire, but the United States is not the world. U.S. lawmakers welcomed the international war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu into the White House. U.S. lawmakers and universities welcome Minister of National Security Itamar Ben-Gvir, who was disqualified from military service because of his affiliation with the Kahan movement, declared a terrorist organization by the U.S. and Israel. Can you imagine being so extreme that you cannot serve in the Israeli army, the same army that sprays 5.5-year-old girls with 335 bullets and executes 15 paramedics and buries them along with their ambulances in a mass grave? The Israeli army wouldn't have Ben-Gvir, but U.S. lawmakers and several U.S. universities embraced him, just as they colluded to kidnap, disappear, and deport students. Do not look west for moral or political leadership. The United States has long absconded on that position. Do not let the United States and Israel upend the global system. In its defense of Israel, the United States threatens the entire legal structure established since the Second World War. In just 19 months, the U.S. has vetoed 5 ceasefire resolutions to end this genocide, despite the extraordinary invocation of Article 99 by the U.N. Secretary General and 2 invocations of Uniting for Peace resolutions. Both the Biden and Trump administration have denigrated the ICJ. U.S. National Security Spokesman John Kirby described the ICJ case on the Genocide Convention as, quote, meritless, counterproductive, and completely without any basis in fact whatsoever. Our world court is being denigrated. The primary judicial organ of this body is being denigrated by those who claim global leadership. The U.S. is not even a signatory to the Rome Statute, which established the International Criminal Court, but the Trump administration has passed an executive order to place sanctions on the prosecutor and anyone who cooperates with the court. In October 2024, 107 members of Congress threatened to cease financial support to the UN if it unseated Israel, literally threatening its budget for doing your job. What is the purpose of the UN if it cannot stop a genocide and prevent the calculated starvation of 2 million people? The international community has failed many times before and at great cost. One of the most significant times was in 1936, when the League of Nations allowed Mussolini's fascist Italy to invade Ethiopia, an independent member state of the League. Then, the League imposed cosmetic sanctions rather than an oil embargo to stop the war. It tolerated Italy's use of chemical weapons and described Ethiopia's people's war as human shielding. The consequence of racist imperialism was ultimately the dissolution of the League of Nations. The UN was born of this failure. It was born of the commitment to not let atrocities of genocide, from Namibia to the Armenian genocide to the Holocaust, happen again. It is that commitment that is at stake today. If you do not stand up and speak out, This very system will be a casualty of the U.S.-Israel genocidal war on Palestine and the Palestinian people. Today, we do not need the United Nations to be a powerful symbol of international cooperation. We need your collective action to simply be powerful. In this moment, we have many choices. We can acknowledge Israel's campaign as genocide and impose an arms embargo, block the ports, sever diplomatic ties, sever all civilian and military trade, impose cultural and academic boycotts, and unseat Israel for its obstinate transgressions. If genocide is too much, you can confront this atrocity as a war, specifically a colonial war against a racist regime and alien occupation, regulated with the additional protocols and customary laws of war that recognize the captives as POWs, ensure them humane treatment, recognize Palestinian militants as combatants, permit third-party intervention. We can use the law to protect hospitals and schools and shelters, to protect the journalists and doctors and aid workers, to forcibly open the humanitarian corridors and abide by the ICC arrest warrants to arrest Netanyahu and Gallant upon arrival. If war is too much, you can confront this atrocity as a humanitarian tragedy, and you can send in a peacekeeping mission to protect Palestinians who have been denied their right to self-defense for nearly 8 decades. And if humanitarian tragedy is too much, you can find a way to have mercy on the Palestinian children, the ones who have been pulled from the rubble with two limbs and no family, and find themselves in a cage without food or water. Do not sit in the seat of power and do nothing. The United States is an empire, but the United States is not the world. You are the world. Each and every one of you has the capacity to halt this charade, to fulfill the minimal mandate of protecting a people's right to exist. Individually, you are each someone's progeny, and you will be an ancestor to someone. Our time on this earth is ephemeral, and I implore you to give it meaning. May we transform this world into a place worthy of our children. May you be protected. May you be strong. May we be victorious. Free Palestine, and may Palestine free us all. Thank you.
Applause for Professor Nora Erekat. You heard her address to the United Nations on Nakba Day, May 15, 2025. Nora Erekat is a Palestinian human rights lawyer and Rutgers University professor. She's the author of Justice for Some, Law and the Question of Palestine. You can find the video of Nora Erekat's address at the United Nations under the title Today is Day 585 of Genocide, Professor Nora Erekat's Urgent Plea at the UN. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, TUCRadio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.